Hello and welcome to this podcast focusing on TROP2 targeting antibody drug conjugates for triple-negative breast cancer. In this episode, which covers the content from a recent online Burst CME program, Drs. Aditya Bardia, Erica Hamilton, and Tiffany Traina discuss navigating the currently available therapies and potential ramifications of ongoing clinical trials on future treatment paradigms for patients with triple-negative breast cancer. This activity is provided by PER and supported by an educational grant from Gilead Sciences, Inc.
And welcome to this BIRD CME program, expert roundtable and panel discussions, current and future landscape of TNBC. On behalf of Physicians Education Research, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm Aditya Bardia, medical oncologist at UCLA.
It's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Erica Hamilton, Director of Breast Cancer Research Program, Chair of Breast Executive Committee at Sarah Cannon Research Institute, and Dr. Tiffany Traina, Vice Chair of Oncology Operations, Section Head, Triple Negative Breast Cancer, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Associate Professor at Weill Cornell Medical College. Welcome.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining today. During this program, we will discuss the current and emerging therapeutic strategies for management of triple negative breast cancer, focusing our discussion on the rationale for targeting TROP2 in the treatment of TNBC and assessing implications of new practice-changing data. This is a panel-style discussion, so that'll help provide insight into how to integrate these strategies into routine clinical practice. Okay, so let's start. We will talk about management of TNBC in the frontline setting, talk about current role of ADCs in the second line setting, the role of TROP2 ADCs plus ICI, limitations, strategies for moving these ADCs in neoadjuvant, adjuvant, and talk about clinical trials as well. So maybe I'll start with Dr. Hamilton. Do you want to review your algorithm for management of a patient with a TNBC, let's say in the metastatic setting?
Yeah, so it's a quickly evolving field. Right now in the first line setting, we care about whether a patient has PD-L1 expression in their tumor. So if so, we have approval of pembrolizumab, and that's currently approved with essentially chemotherapy, two choices of a taxane or gemcitabine carboplatin. Then if not, patients typically get that single agent chemotherapy if they don't have PD-L1 expression. And I think it's always hard to not forget the PARP inhibitor, but for our subset of patients that have BRCA alterations, PARP inhibitors are also an option in this setting. And then in the second line setting and beyond is when we really start to think about our antibody drug conjugates. We have TROP2 targeting antibody drug conjugate, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about this. We also have trastuzumab deruxtecan, which is HER2 targeting for the subset of patients that have HER2 low expression. And then this is going to be changing. At ASCO this year, we saw ASCENT-04 looking at sacituzumab govitecan in combination with pembrolizumab. This was a positive study, and it's currently under evaluation at the FDA. And we've also already seen a press release for ASCENT-03, the companion first-line study for triple-negative for patients that did not have PD-L1 expression. So kind of that chemotherapy alone versus sacituzumab govitecan. We haven't seen the data for this, but we have heard in press release that it's positive, and we anticipate seeing it this fall at the ESMO conference.
It's great. It's great to see these ADCs moving in earlier lines. So if we talk about, you know, biomarkers, Dr. Traina, let's say a patient has both PD-L1 positive disease and also germline BRCA mutation. What's your preferred treatment option for that patient in the first line?
Sure. What a terrific question. And Dr. Hamilton's algorithm was just beautifully said and articulated. And I was thinking about, okay, what about this circumstance where we have overlap of biomarkers? So I would say in that setting that the PD-L1 positivity really is sort of the first step for me in thinking about incorporating checkpoint inhibitor and how important that is to do in the first line setting. So in light of that, I would choose my backbone chemotherapy, likely to be a platinum-based therapy with pembrolizumab in the first-line setting for somebody who had both a germline BRCA mutation as well as a PD-L1 positive tumor. Also, as Dr. Hamilton said, this is an evolving space. So we've seen data for the safety of combination checkpoint inhibitor and PARP inhibitor. And hopefully we'll eventually see move up into that place, the option to use the PARP inhibitor plus checkpoint inhibitor. But right now, for my patients who are PD-L1 positive tumors and germline BRCA mutation carriers, I'm more inclined to use a platinum-based chemotherapy combination with pembrolizumab.
That's great. So we covered first line well. Let's move to now second line. Let's say, a patient has received carboplatin plus pembrolizumab for PD-L1 positive metastatic TNBC and then has disease progression after 9 months. And in the second line setting for a patient with HER2 low disease, do you prefer SG or T-DXd in this setting? Dr. Hamilton.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that we've been impressed with the antibody drug conjugate data, really kind of regardless of which antibody drug conjugate that we're looking at. All of these have clearly beat chemotherapy. I think for triple negative disease, our data is a little bit stronger with sacituzumab govitecan, our Trop-2 targeting antibody drug conjugate. The vast majority of patients in that trial had triple negative breast cancer. And this is a little bit converse here. In the trastuzumab deruxtecan, they really took HER2 negative, and so it was triple negative or HR positive, but the vast majority of our patients actually had hormone receptor positive disease. And so, data was positive in the triple negative subset, but it really wasn't as many patients. And so in triple negative disease, I really do think about probably using that Trop-2 targeting antibody drug conjugate first, but definitely interested to hear what Dr. Traina says as well.
Yeah, I would say I share the exact same algorithm. The original ASCENT study that Dr. Bardia has published on was nearly 500 women, all with triple negative breast cancer. So the sort of the body of evidence there is really directed towards the TNBC patient population. And while we've seen great activity with trastuzumab deruxtecan in the hormone receptor negative HER2 low, that patient population was only about 60 patients, the teeny, about 10, 11% of DESTINY-Breast04. So I'm sure we're going to get the question about sequencing, but I tend to lead with sacituzumab govitecan for my triple negative patients. And then for those that are also HER2 low, I think about using trastuzumab deruxtecan for them following sacituzumab.
Great. Good to see the consistent care. And you brought up sequencing. That was exactly my next question. So let's say the patient gets SG, or with ASCENT-04, let's say patients are getting SG plus pembro first line and then also have HER2 low disease. Would you then consider T-DXd in next line, or do you believe in this chemo sandwich technique, bring in some chemo and then later on bring in ADC? Dr. Trainer.
Yeah, so we have seen retrospective data and sort of real-world experience of sequencing ADCs. And I think what we've consistently seen is whichever one we use first seems to have greater benefit. To me, that's not so surprising. It's the same pattern we've seen with cytotoxic chemotherapy also. We just recently saw some data at ASCO for this idea of the sandwich approach of intervening with chemotherapy, perhaps that has a different mechanism of action than the payload for our ADC. And that seemed to be an encouraging approach. Yet, in general, we're lacking prospective data to really tell us how to sequence these ADCs. I mean, ultimately, what we'd love to understand is whether the mechanism of resistance to ADC number one is coming from the target resistance, or is it coming from resistance to the payload? So I think we still have a lot to figure out to devise an optimal sequencing strategy. And things may get even more complicated as we have another antibody drug conjugate that we expect to see data for in triple negative breast cancer, and that's Dato-DXd, where we have Trop-2 as the target, but we have that same deruxtecan payload. And so it's a really complicated space right now, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Sequencing and different ADCs. We talked about SG and the role of SG in first line setting. You mentioned Dato-DXd, which is another Trop-2 ADC. There's a third one, which is sacituzumab tirumotecan. Dr. Hamilton, do you want to review sac-TMT? We've seen some data from OptiTROP-Breast01, and there are ongoing clinical trials as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to make our lives a little bit more complicated, but I always say that having choices is good and having patients have choices is even better. So sac-TMT, again, a TROP2 targeting antibody drug conjugate. It is also a topo-1 payload. It has a DAR kind of higher up there in the about 7.5 range. So you can think about it similarly. But what we're really learning from all of these antibody drug conjugates is though all we like to put them in a class, they really have quite different side effects. This is certainly the case between sacituzumab govitecan and datopotamab deruxtecan. Even though they're actually both targeting TROP2, they have a different side effect profile. So I would say that the sac-TMT data from OptiTROP-01 looked very similar, essentially, a benefit of over 4 months in progression-free survival up into that 7 month range with that trial. But side effects look a little bit different. We see more cytopenias. And this is really both neutropenia as well as anemia, some thrombocytopenia, and we can see stomatitis with this drug as well. Really contrast that to sacituzumab govitecan, where it's pretty much isolated neutropenia, although it can be a little bit more challenging because it's a day one, day eight administration. And then we also have quite a bit of diarrhea with that compound.
You're exactly right. And that's why good to have options. And interesting, these three TROP2 ADCs, SG is given day one, day eight. Sac-TMT is given every 2 weeks. And Dato-DXd is given every 3 weeks. So also gives us a different schedule with these options. So in terms of, all these drugs get, approved in the future. If they do, I guess it'll be the safety profile that'll help dictate, and the schedule. If the efficacy looks similar when we have these options. Let's talk about another case. A 36-year-old patient with a germline BRCA mutation has inflammatory grade 3 lymph node positive TNBC. She gets KEYNOTE-522 protocol. So that's carboplatin AC with pembrolizumab. But unfortunately, 2 months later, is noticed to have isolated cerebral mets because she presents with vomiting, nausea, vomiting, which prompts imaging. And so then she gets surgical resection followed by stereotactic radiation and has no evidence of disease at this time. What would you consider for this patient? Dr. Trainer, this is, a tough case, but something we do see in clinical practice, which is this issue of isolated brain mets.
We do. This is so challenging. So certainly, I think a case that would benefit from our multidisciplinary review. So this is the type of patient where I would be discussing with my colleagues as well as my radiation colleagues. Obviously, neurosurgery was involved. But here, again, I would be curious, what is the PD-L1 status of the tumor from the cranial resection that she had. You've told me she's germline BRCA positive and she has no extracranial disease. I think this might be a case where if PD-L1 were negative, I would actually consider leading with the PARP inhibitor here, getting CNS penetration, really good quality of life with an oral agent, and keeping a close eye on things systemically. I do not like that really short disease-free interval from finishing KEYNOTE and going to surgery. That makes me quite nervous.
Yeah, that makes sense. And in a way, becomes extension of Olympia with the use of PARP, I guess, in a pseudo-adjuvant setting.
Right.
A tough scenario, but every trial cannot answer each and every patient scenario. So I appreciate you reviewing this. Let's do one more case and then we can wrap up. A 47-year-old premenopausal female who was diagnosed with de novo metastatic TNBC. So ERPR negative, has HER2-low disease. Otherwise, pretty much normal organ function per se. So, if the patient has PD-L1 negative metastatic TNBC, Dr. Hamilton, what would you consider the first line? Are you ready to consider SG, or you want to look at the clinical data and approval before considering SG for this patient?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously we're going to have to see that data and we're going to have the ability to actually give it to this de novo patient. I'm certainly excited about it. I mean, I think that this is where the field is going, but we don't have that data quite yet. So as it stands now, this really would be a patient that we would think about chemotherapy alone here in the first line, but maybe not for long.
Yeah, And then in the future, we might have other drugs, SG and Dato-DXd. So to wrap up, Dr. Trana, could you review some of these trials which are looking at these agents in early breast cancer? We talked a lot about metastatic breast cancer, but how about early breast cancer with neoadjuvant SG or Dato-DXd ongoing studies?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think that one of our highest risk patient populations are those women with triple negative breast cancer, obviously, who have nodal burden or large tumors and go on to get neoadjuvant therapy, and then have residual disease following our best agents. So, right now, in that setting with residual disease, we tend to use capecitabine for 6 months and continue out the pembrolizumab. Or if they have a germline BRCA mutation, I would say my practice is to use adjuvant olaparib and finish out their pembrolizumab. But we'd love to see these antibody drug conjugates, if they're so powerful in advanced disease, try to move them up into the early stage setting to minimize that risk of recurrence and improve survival, right? That's what we're trying to find. So we have ASCENT-05, which is looking at moving sacituzumab govitecan up into the early stage setting for those patients who received neoadjuvant treatment and had residual disease at the time of their surgery. That ASCENT-05 randomizes patients to sacituzumab with pembro versus standard of care treatment of physician's choice with pembrolizumab. We also have the SASIA trial, big study, right? 1,200 patients who had early stage breast cancer, had received taxane-based neoadjuvant therapy, also failed to have a path CR, and they get randomized to sacituzumab govitecan or treatment of physician's choice per standard of care. We've also seen enrollment in early stage trials with Dato-DXd. So TROPION-Breast03 is looking at Dato-DXd. Actually, slight difference from what you saw from ASCENT. Here, patients had neoadjuvant therapy, residual disease, and there is a three-arm randomization to standard of care investigators' choice, single agent Dato-DXd or Dato-DXd with durvalumab, another checkpoint inhibitor. So here, trying to answer the question, like, do we really need to continue checkpoint inhibition if somebody had residual disease following their neoadjuvant pembrolizumab? And then we also have TROPION-Breast04, which is enrolling now. This is a neoadjuvant trial for patients with TNBC, getting Dato-DXd and durva for 8 cycles, followed by surgery, and then durva in the post-op setting versus standard of care KEYNOTE-522 type regimen.
Oh, that's fantastic. Great to see these studies in early breast cancer, which will hopefully continue to improve the outcomes for our patients with cancer. This was extremely informative. Thank you so much for joining today. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. This was very, very helpful. Thank you, Dr. Trana. Thank you, Dr. Hamilton, for your contribution. And thank you all for joining today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.